Today is the 22nd of September, 2019, and we're here to discuss Kabbalah and psychoanalysis. And there's Ron. Hi. And one way to start is just to ask, well, how did Eigen come to write about Kabbalah and psychoanalysis? Well, we read that Wilfred Bion was partly responsible. The story goes, Eigen met Bion in New York in 1978, about a year before Bion died. And they had two private sessions together in the short time that Bion was in New York City to give some talks. And in one of these two private meetings, out of the blue, Bion asks Eigen if he knows the Kabbalah. And then they both agree that neither one of them really knows the Kabbalah. And then after a pause, Bion says to Eigen that he, Bion, uses Kabbalah as a framework for psychoanalysis. Just like that. It was a poignant moment and one that lingered and deepened and percolated in Eigen for over three decades. And 34 years later, Eigen gives a series of lectures at one of the analytic institutes. I think it was the Institute for Expressive Analysis on Kabbalah and psychoanalysis. And that series of lectures became two whole books and part of a third book. The first one is the first two lectures that we're reading. There's also a book called A Felt Sense, which is the second two lectures he gave. And the fifth lecture became part of the third book called The Birth of Experience. So lots and lots there. This pivotal Bion Eigen meeting, I think, can be seen as one kind of short-term psychotherapy, a serendipitous therapy that is not evidence-based, but one where there is unconscious to unconscious communication that generates sparks. Bion tapped into something in Eigen's Jewish heritage, Eigen's wellspring and roots. And Bion finds this in his own intuition of Eigen's unconscious and feeds back to Eigen a link, a connection that proves fertile, including insights into Bion's style, his support, and his openness. Those two meetings provided Eigen with someone to look up to, as well as a calling, a path, new portals to explore, inviting Eigen to step through unknown doorways. Eigen was just in his early 40s, about 42 years old when he met Bion. Still a kid. He's 83 today. And just as Freud and Carl Jung broadened and deepened our notions of unconscious processes in their own way, that is, not just drive theory, but mythic stories representing psychic urges and dynamics. And not exclusively neurology as a substrate for psyche, but large, submerged icebergs of unknown psyche that are a hidden resource and can open us to more than is apparent. So just as those pioneers did so, so too did Bion open and deepen something for Eigen. They were moments that count and can make a difference in life. Now, Kabbalah is, as we know, a Jewish mystical tradition. And Eigen is no stranger to mystery and the value of not knowing. He has good company and lineage. I think of another one of Eigen's mentors, D.W. Winnicott, who he also met in person. Winnicott's term, our incommunicado core, something absolutely personal to each of us that must not be violated and that we may not even be aware of. Or I think of Bion's notation, O, referring to fundamental reality of infinite unknowns. And now Eigen, valorizing unknowing and beyond knowing processes, opening us to the complexities of paradox, doubleness, and mystery. These pioneers all present in their own way and in their own language important implications of processes that go by many names, whether we call these non-being, void, emptiness, unsaturated spaciousness, black hole, dark psyche, Andre Green's the negative, and even absent aspects of psyche, rhythms of psychic deadness and aliveness that are also a natural part of living. In fact, these pioneers have helped us understand how these things are generative ingredients in life rather than something to be feared. So what's the first thing I did? I looked up on Wikipedia. What's Kabbalah? Here's what Wikipedia says. Very short. Sephirot, meaning emanations, are the 10 attributes, emanations in Kabbalah, plus one hidden one, through which Ein Sof reveals itself and continuously creates both the physical realm and the chain of higher metaphysical realms. End quote. That's Wikipedia. Okay, so my own Eigen-esque translation of this might be something like, Kabbalah is a model of various spiritual and psychical energy centers, flows, and balances within us that come from we know not where, and which express our psychical and affective states, tendencies, and capacities as an interwoven and interacting web of being and non-being, a web and flow that affects us through and through. Eigen takes it his own way a little bit when he writes on the top of page 82 that the Sephirot have multiple references and act as a kind of mirror images between godly capacities and human capacities. The Sephirot function both as God's medium for creation and as human capacities to realize divine life. But our capacities can be used for many purposes. Human wisdom, understanding, knowledge can make atom bombs, but also medicine, beautiful buildings, wondrous art, and enlightenment journeys. There seem to be no end to what we can do with our capacities for good and for ill. At the same time, the work of capacities can open us to the unknown more deeply, fully, growing contact with the deepest of all. Some express this by trying to lead a godly life in a human way. But one cannot trap or exhaust Ein Sof with mind or story or intention. Yet a point of contact keeps speaking to us, through us, touched by the untouchable. So we know there are many models of psycho-spiritual life. And in our book, Eigen likes to draw parallels between Kabbalah and chakra centers in Kundalini. At the same time, any model or system contains and expresses variation or interpretation in how it is used, how it is practically applied. Diversity of approach becomes common within the unity of any model that continues to develop. And this is true for psychoanalysis as much as it is true for emotionally focused therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. Like many core religious traditions with their diverse offshoots, there are ongoing distinctions within union, differences within sameness. So each individual sephira can have different qualities and functions and uses, and things become very complex quickly. But don't worry, we aren't going to be able to cover everything. In these few meetings, we're going to get only a small taste, a tiny nibble. I can tell you how worried I was after deciding to do this book last May or June. The prospect and the enormity of doing a Kabbalah seminar, it set me back on my heels for most of the summer. I was in a daze of bewilderment and fear in the face of Kabbalah's enormity, its history, complexity. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of texts written about Kabbalah over the last 2,000 years. But I was able to calm myself a little bit when I remembered a couple things. One is a paraphrase and one is a little story. The paraphrase is from Eigen, who writes, quote, "I would like to say a positive word for the freedom that making room for insufficiency can bring. I would like to say a positive word for the freedom that making room for our insufficiency can bring. I'm well aware how badly people can feel about themselves and their insufficiencies, but there can be a positive gain in tolerating and accepting limitations. Many people I have worked with, including myself, have felt the great relief that an acknowledged sense of limitation can bring. Do what you can do, not what you can't. Do what you can do, not what you cannot. The impossible beyond will always remain an eternal allure. But on the plane of Malchut, this life, this earth, your life, you must learn what you were given and what is possible." Kind of a lifelong task. The second calming down I received from a story about a rabbi. This was a revered rabbi who went by the name of Zusha. And the story is that Rabbi Zusha lay crying at the end of his life, and his people came around his bed and asked why he was crying, because they knew he had done so many good deeds in his life, many mitzvahs. So why should he be sad or worried about God's judgment? As they felt, his place in heaven was assured by all the good he had done in his life. They asked Zusha if he was afraid that God might judge why he was not more like Moses or more like Abraham or Isaac or Jacob. And Rabbi Zusha said, "No, I'm not afraid that God will ask me why I have not become more like Moses or Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. No, that's not what scares me. I am afraid that God will ask me, why have you not become more like Zusha? Or more like Zusha was intended to be? And then what will I say?" So that calmed me down, because I said, so I'm going to try to cut myself some slack and not think I can do more than I can do. And I hope each of you will feel the freedom to take these readings and filter them through your own being, in your own way, and talk about what particular meanings they have for you personally, what parts impact you the most. Give your personal response. We all know that Eigen is all about impact and response, and so I hope we can keep going with that here with one another as we discuss the book. We're not going to get it all. It's beyond our ability to grasp in its entirety. We're not going to get to any kind of finish line or complete understanding. Partly, Kabbalah is about opening. Opening to the more we do not know we are. A paradox. We're more than we know, but also need to stay within ourselves. Why is Kabbalah a mystical tradition? Because it starts and ends with the unknown and with the unfathomable. To say Kabbalah starts and ends with the unknown is not a defect. Actually, it sounds like accurate reality testing to me, because I've met very few people who can recall what occurred before their birth or have knowledge of what comes after dying. Both the beginnings and the ends of our lives are great unknowns. And to bring a little humor into this, when I Googled the word Sephira online, what do you think came up? What comes up almost exclusively is the name of a women's violin rock band from Ireland. Pretty cool. Eigen calls Kabbalah an archipelago, a series of connected islands, a web of energy centers, a worldview into psychical growth of our inner universe of being human. So yes, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by it all. I mean, I'm overwhelmed by psychotherapy, and I'm overwhelmed by the whole notion of unconscious process. But I equally feel overwhelmed connected to mystery and wonder and awe. Overwhelmed for the beauty and complexity of how life and psyche can move and develop and transform themselves, even without our knowledge or intentions. So what was my first encounter? I was a youngster. My first encounter with Kabbalah was hearing all these crazy requirements to be able to study it, all the restrictions and prohibitions for even approaching its study. Weird requirements like only married men over 40 who have a spouse and family, only those who are well-grounded in the world and in Torah, who are mostly sane and able to tolerate encounters with inner worlds of psyche. Well, that's, yes, yes.
It's sort of implied.
What was that, Ron? I didn't hear. We're going to learn about some important contributors in this book, primarily Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Luria, but also Rabbi Akiva and Menachem Schneerson. And I was going to do this at the beginning, but I'll do it now. I want to pass around a couple of images of the tree. There's just two of them, but I have two sets, so I'll pass it around each way. And you can get a visual sense of what the Kabbalah tree might look like. There's hundreds of images, by the way, of this tree. So what's Eigen's background for approaching Kabbalah? He writes, quote, "My own life has been touched by a diversity of spiritual mystical traditions besides Judaism, including Buddhist, Taoist, Hindu, Sufi, and Christian. Similarly, a host of psychoanalytic and non-analytic influences are important to me."
Oh, I'm early.
Yeah. Yes, my dear.
What's time?
10 o'clock. Okay. I'm sorry. Come in, come in.
You started at 10.
Yeah, come in.
Sorry.
Come in, come in. Eigen's background for approaching Kabbalah is also influenced by a host of psychoanalytic and non-analytic influences, including Freud and Jung and Adler, Reich, Searles, Elkin, Kohut, Bion, Winnicott, Milner, Lacan, Pearls, and various kinds of body work. Quite a wide embrace. As a personal aside about Eigen, on our physical plane of existence, he's 83 years old now. He's fallen down physically fallen down 3 times in the last 9 months. But he keeps getting up, and he keeps going. Lately in his online forum, he's been quoting Beckett, Samuel Beckett lines. "You must go on. I can't go on. I'll go on." First, a nearly broken shoulder last January while jogging. Then a broken femur in his leg after falling down stairs in early May, for which he had a surgery. And then what he calls a lighter fall while walking his many miles during his exercise time. So he keeps going. Bless him. So what's the convergence between Kabbalah and psychoanalysis? Agin puts the common aspects this way. He says they have many points of convergence. Both are preoccupied with catastrophe and faith. Both are preoccupied with infinity and intensity of experience. Both are preoccupied with shattering and the possibility of bearing and growing the kind of psyche that can work with dimensions that sensitivity opens. Both are preoccupied with ontological implications of the unknown and the importance of emotional life. So not for the faint of heart. Sensitivity, emotional life, catastrophic impacts of life, what we currently call trauma, laced together with unknown process, unknown background atmospheres at work. And at the same time, there's something that also holds us together in life, contains us, keeps our hearts beating, sparks us, keeps us going, sometimes called faith. And in a later book, Eigen calls the tree of life the tree of faith. And what about infinity, that bothersome concept? What about the relationships between the infinite and our finite world, our seemingly infinite imagination and our finite bodies? Eigen feels these are not separate things, that infinity is woven and interwoven with everyday life. And one thing this means is that there are infinite moments within tiny little moments, as when we look into the face of a baby, or touch a loved one, or have a deep moment of encounter in a psychotherapy session. You remember as a kid, you'd look up at the night sky, and you look at all those stars, and at least I was struck by infinity then. Or thinking about our conscious awareness before it was aware of itself, or how vast the ocean is. I'm sure you could all pick your own favorite example of infinity. And the last thing I'll mention is just a brief word about the word God. Because God makes a few appearances in this book, and it's such a loaded word, God. For some, a very objectionable word. It's a word so very saturated by history and culture and tradition and upbringing and religion. In my bicultural upbringing, there were Hindu gods and goddesses in the atmosphere, each with their own special attributes, as well as Western monotheistic gods, gods imbued with our own projections of who they might be, a kind of projective identification of our own unconscious wishes. In my family, It was partly the image of some old white guy with a long beard up in the sky, you know, pulling levers. So many projections, like using the male pronoun, or attributing omnipotence and omniscience. Eigen writes that, quote, "Everything we say about God, we are saying about ourselves." From this point of view, God in whatever form is our psychological projection, possessing qualities we might wish for ourselves. For our purposes here, I would somehow like to bracket this word and desaturate it. One kind of silly way to do this is to spell the word backwards. D-O-G. Dog. But then some will rightly object that one's dog is like a god. And dogs can be just as sacred as any god is to someone else. What other ways are there to desaturate the God concept? One way is to try to get underneath God somehow, get prior to or beyond God in concept or symbol or representation or word. We can try to imagine before creation, before existence. And that's where it all starts, where Ein Sof lives, at the top or beyond the top of the Kabbalistic tree.